Good morning, happy Friday, and welcome in to the Blitz. Charlie Collier, Josh Stackhouse on this wonderful, amazing, fantastic Friday morning. A victory Friday combined with a game day Friday. I don't know how Fridays get better than that. It's the Friday of all Fridays today on the Blitz.
So, I'm getting really used to these Thursday games now, and I love them.
There is I kind of like the I like the Thursday games too. I like having the opportunity to wake up Friday as a winner. You know,
yeah.
Fridays are just always like I was saying. I mean, they're Fridays. Everyone loves Friday. It's Friday. You got to get down for Friday.
Friday's a Friday. It's a Friday. It's a Friday.
So if you can add, even extra extra sauce to that, extra juju to that. No, it just it makes your Friday even better. It's like discovering that microwave cheese tastes amazing.
I'm sorry. Just melted cheese.
It's like, it's like putting melted cheese on something. It makes it even better.
It's like when somebody first discovers queso and it's not just melted cheese. They're like, is that a bowl of melted cheese? And you're like, No, this is queso.
Fantastic. I guess maybe the downside is that you're giving up the extra Monday boost if you went on Sunday, but
you get Friday and Saturday to lift your Sunday though. And then Sunday you just get a day of rest.
Yeah, but I guess if you do play on Sunday, then if you don't play Sunday, then you don't get the feeling of victory on Monday. But to be fair, the Sunday games are usually afternoon games, so that kind of wears off by Monday morning anyway.
Yeah, true.
And you get the whole, the weekend win.
Because you're about done before dinner, so once you sit down for dinner with the family, it's just basically the whole aesthetic of the win's about to rub off once you hit your head down, watch that nightly TV. I agree with that. But also, I do see the aesthetics of winning on a Sunday to brighten everyone's Monday mood, because everybody hates Mondays. Except I'm a hater of Tuesday.
But man, 27-2. I mean, my goodness.
Did anyone expect this one? I didn't expect 20. I didn't expect 20 runs. That was nuts.
I felt bad for him. I did feel bad for him right around that seventh inning where you scored 7.
Dude, I turned it off in the sixth. I was like, I'm gonna go check out this basketball game real quick. I'll switch it over, and I missed the whole seventh inning, and I go to ESPN, I just check the score, and I'm like, what, 21? 21? I couldn't believe it, man. My mind was just blown.
Yeah, I know. I felt bad for him right around 21-0, and then they had the nerve to bat flip a home run down by more than 20 runs towards the Tennessee dugout. And then I no longer had any pity for them.
You got a problem with that?
I appreciated the show no mercy 5 more runs to get it to 27.
I honestly I thought it was a joke. When he bat flipped, I thought it was just I can't think of the right word, but not sarcastic, but just kind of just a ha-ha. Look what I did.
It just would have been funny if he would have just done it towards his own dugout. I don't know.
I mean, they're already down 20. I think he did it. It's just
I guess, yeah, it was kind of funny.
Probably
but
doesn't.
I still
it doesn't matter.
The show no mercy. Take no prisoners.
Oh, yeah. I find that so funny. You're down by so much. Because I remember, we were playing Hillsboro in high school. And we were down by 3 touchdowns. And I don't know what happened. It was the final 2 minutes. And I laid a hit on the quarterback, and I was yeah. I got excited, and everybody's looking at me like, dude, you're losing bad. I was like, oh, you're right, my bad. I don't know what came over me. That always gets me. The moment.
Yeah, 27 runs, though. Wow. Most we scored in an SEC game since 97. Record-tying 7 home runs as well. Worst loss in an SEC game in the history of Mississippi State's baseball program. You did that to the national champs. And most runs given up since 1943.
God, dude. I mean, 27 on 25 hits. That's efficient baseball. That is that's just there's really not anything you can say about last night that would
could be negative. I was impressed by the amount of people there in the bottom of the ninth when they were down 25.
It stayed kind of man. I mean, how do you leave a showing though like that? Like even if you're the away team, like that's still an impressive. I mean, every batter barreled the ball. I mean, they were just barreling it, man. Every ball. And it's beautiful when you see like good baseball, you know?
I mean, that's what 18-0 and then 27-2. I'm not a math guy, so I had to pull out my calculator and stall as I do that, but that's 45-2 over the last 18 innings.
Oh, dude, I wasn't even thinking about the midweek game either. Dang, we did just put oh my god. 45-2 games, is that what you said?
Yeah, you know, just a casual average of 22.5 to 1.
So I mean, like, how many pitchers did they go through last night? I feel like they were
honestly, I couldn't even remember.
I that's what I'm saying. I was like, I got to three, and I kind of.
I mean, they got to the point obviously where they were just using guys that
they got
to,
one,
to
two,
eat the
three,
innings that
four,
weren't going to pitch otherwise.
Six. God, that's crazy. Yeah, terrific job, guys. Very impressive win.
I really don't know the most impressive part either. I really don't know if it was Chase Dolander. I don't know if it was all the home runs. I mean, I don't know if it was the 27 runs. I mean, well, obviously the 27 runs, probably the most impressive, but just performance-wise, man, everyone was...
I mean, but Trey...
Incredible.
Trey Lipscomb, 4-for-4. Evan Russell, 4-for-5. I mean, yeah, all right. Yeah, 4-for-5.
Poor Cortland Lawson, the only one that didn't get a hit.
Aw. No.
Poor Cortland Lawson.
I hated that. I hate that feeling. You just can't do it. It's just not your night, and everyone else is
found,
night.
We found like nearly what 30? 25 hits.
Yeah, 30 total hits in the game. Mississippi State only had 5. Did we have a hit? No hitter going until the sixth.
Yeah, we had through six. Chase Dolander had the no hitter, but man, we got a lot of thoughts on this baseball game. We got a lot to break down. We'll go ahead and catch a break, and we'll dive into some of the takeaways from last night and also start to look forward to game two tonight because, hey, it doesn't matter if it was 1-0 last night or 27-2. It has no impact on what's going to happen today, and there's still a series on the line. So we'll start to look forward to that tonight as well. Stay with us right here on The Blitz. So Chase Dolander last night. Was nearly perfect if it wasn't for a walk that was not a walk. I mean, it was a walk because human error, that's one of the elements of baseball. That's just part of the game. I am pro umpires and human error being an element of the game more so than I am like robo umps.
I think that's just an
element of baseball.
I just want... I guess not even there to be a robot ump behind the plate, but just something that takes over the strike zone. You can leave the ump behind the plate just for calls and such, but I feel like if you have that box on the TV and you're showing the whole world where the strike zone is.
The box on the TV isn't always
accurate. Yeah, I know. And each ump can, like, you know, he has their own box almost, you know, and I do like that part, but I guess more professional. But
I like the human element of... Yeah. Of umpiring, umpires calling balls and strikes. You know, I think there's a lot of criticism for officiating and umpiring in sports right now, and that's fair, but, you know, some of it is, but, yeah.
Where's a fan base going to throw?
Umpires generally, even when a home plate umpire has a bad game, you know, that's still like usually like 93%, like 94%.
Yeah, like most of their statistics are 90, very high for getting the right call. So
home plate umpires, with how fast those pitches are coming in, with how much movement they have, I think generally do a pretty good job. And sometimes a bad call or two is just part of the game of baseball, and you hope it doesn't hurt you.
Well, if you take away that human error, where are the fans going to throw their excuses, you know, at the same time?
You know, I like when during a game you're like, okay, well, hey, you know, if there's a righty up, I can work this outer half of the zone with pitches breaking, you know, across the plate. He's been giving that call. Or I like when you're a batter and you're like, okay, well, here I have to protect just a little higher because that's where his zone's been. Like, I like when you have to adjust.
As
long as there's consistency. Now, the umpires I don't like is when one guy gets a high strike call and then the other doesn't. Or, you know, it's inconsistent. But if you have a consistent zone, you know, I do like that element of things. But
it does add another element to the game of adjusting per umpire, I guess, the strike zone kind of, and just knowing what's being called.
Anyway, Chase Hillander, though, so efficient. Six innings, 67 pitches, just that one walk that really probably shouldn't have been a walk, six strikeouts, and obviously the big no hits. Unfortunately, you know, you had to pull him because you couldn't stop scoring runs, and he sat in the dugout in the top of the seventh for a long time as Tennessee scored a touchdown that top half of the inning. So, you know, at that point you pull him. Which, hey, it is what it is. I tweeted it last night. I was, you know, regardless of how long that inning would have lasted, I would have pulled him after six.
Are you surprised they let him go six, though? Considering, like, are you surprised they let them go six? Because just thinking of resting arms, we were talking about that
just
yesterday.
Just because it was 67 pitches.
Okay. What would have been your pitch limit?
I think he was right around where I would want him at.
Okay.
You know, he can obviously, he's the guy that can throw 90 pitches, 100 pitches, and be fine to make his next start and not really feel fatigue. But he's also a guy that's been, you know, that dealt with that injury about a month ago. You know, he's also a guy that is, at this point, your most important pitcher, your best pitcher, the one that I've been most confident in.
I think
all year.
Just solidified that.
That's the guy that I've been saying all year is our best pitcher. From before the season started, that's going to be our best pitcher. That is the guy that I think also will make the best MLB pitcher, just because of the way he can throw hard fastballs on the black. But regardless, he was incredible last night, 67 pitches. Winning a national championship and having him at his best is more important than a no-hitter. No-hitters are fun, no-hitters are cool, and I'm sure Chase Dolander would have loved the opportunity to chase that. But, you know, just keeping him in the right place, health-wise, rest-wise, you know, pitch-wise, arm-wise, that is far more important, unfortunately. You know, I don't want to sound like a downer here.
But no, you're correct. We're about to make a
really
push.
Fun. Yeah. And in a perfect world, you know, it could have been, he could have had the opportunity to go after it. But
everybody loves to see something like that. But like you said, we're getting to the good stuff, the juicy part of the season, and you want everybody to be as healthy as possible and warm as possible.
But Mark McLaughlin, he comes in, promptly loses the no-hitter, which I guess the last time we saw him in the SEC, he didn't pitch last weekend, did he? But he pitched against Kentucky. He came in extras against Kentucky. He came in, I believe, what, the 12th, maybe? It was either the 11th or 12th, and he got out of the jam. So, you know, Mark McLaughlin, a guy that sneaky decent, to not, you know, maybe even the kind of sneaky good. But last night, again, didn't get out of the inning and did give up three hits and a run. So I don't really know where he falls on the pecking order heading into the postseason. You know, you probably don't want to have to necessarily use him unless it's in a situation to eat innings. You know, Wyatt Evans comes in. Good for him to get an outing. Not a bad 1 1/3 and a run on a hit. It was just that one home run. And then Xander Seacrest, a guy that maybe you see start a game in Hoover. You know, Logan mentioned that yesterday. I doubt that he does just because you already have four starters. But Definitely a guy that now that, you know, midweek games are over, his midweek starts are over, definitely a guy that I believe can contribute in this postseason.
100%. I
would trust
him. We talk about our four
pitchers,
but we really have 5 to 6 that you could possibly, if you have to, put out as a starter.
I would wonder what Xander Seacrest would look like as a weekend starter, because I think he is good enough, he's talented enough that for most SEC teams, he'd be right there in the consideration. And you know, maybe that's in his future as well, but he dominated midweeks. Granted, you know, the competition is lesser, but he was really good all year. So I trust him absolutely to get the ball in the postseason. He's a guy that I think just provides you another valuable element. But he got an inning out of the bullpen. You know, maybe part of that was just to get him some work. Maybe he just had a pin to throw that day. But, you know, maybe part of it, too, was just trying to give him an opportunity in a leverage-free, entirely leverage-free situation in the bottom of the ninth just to
get comfortable,
to feel coming out of the pen like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure that you're looking at him being either probably your opening night relief, maybe, if not, like, your secondary relief. Like, same thing as, like, Tidwell.
In the postseason?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
It'll – once you get to the postseason, it is just – as long as it's a high-leverage situation, it's going to go Redmond Walsh, priority A. Whenever it has to happen, it will happen. As if it's high,
like, every time, you think?
Until he has a day that, hey, he's not available that day. Then every day it'll be Redmond Walsh. As long as it's a high leverage situation, he'll start out, or at least he'll be in the highest leverage situation. If it's an early exit for a starting pitcher and you need long relief, or even mid relief, you know, you'll probably get Camden Sewell, or maybe Ben Joyce as well there. Maybe even Kirby Cannell would pitch. But also, I mean, you know, there is that other guy now, Xander Seacrest, that you could bring in. That could have still a role in that postseason. He's just another arm that I would trust.
Yeah.
You know, again, you're probably not going to need him, you know, necessarily, but if you get to a situation where you do, if you're getting to a situation where you've played a lot of games, or, you know, both teams have played a lot of games, or you're still in an advantageous position with Xander Seacrest. Like, if you're at the end of, like, a loser's bracket, or, you know, you and another team are both have gone through their starting pitchers, and, you know, for some reason our fourth pitcher isn't available too, I still think Xander would be better than what most other teams could give you in that same instance. So, I mean, just another, you know, advantage to have there. But I feel like he'll have some sort of role this postseason, even though it'll likely be minimal, just because of how many other good pitchers you have.
Yeah.
Still really like him.
God, that's just crazy.
So, yeah, that was – I mean, the pitching, again, last night, just really good. You know, everyone always pays attention to the 18 or the 27. But same goes for Wednesday night. A really good Belmont lineup that – you know, you didn't see Belmont's best pitchers, but – outside of third baseman Logan Jarvis, who was hurt for Belmont, you saw their entire starting lineup. You know, you saw Belmont's best, and you held them to 0 runs. That's a tournament offense. That is a mid-major offense that's really good. I mean, that has a guy hitting over 400 that's going to get drafted, and it has another guy hitting over 300 that, you know, might get drafted, that, you know, has a guy that is close to the top of his conference in home runs. And that lineup was absolutely shut down. Not only did they not score, I mean, they got, two hits?
Yeah, I think it was just two.
And they were both from the dude that hit over 400. So
God,
that was a really impressive performance from your pitching staff. And then, again, last night, you know, pretty much perfect through six. And still you just give up that one long ball, and McLaughlin gets hit around a little bit, and you give up 2 runs. So, you know, as much as people will say, hey, 18 runs, oh my gosh, this offense is crazy, or 27 runs, oh my, this offense is otherworldly, the pitching's been pretty damn good, too.
Yep.
I mean, everything is clicking at the right time, hopefully, as you head into the rest of the weekend and then into Hoover. But with Chase Dolander throwing 69, or what did I say? 67?
67.
Either way, one of those two, yeah. 67 pitches last night.
Yeah.
on 5 days rest, I think that sets him up to be able to start on that first Wednesday game if he wants to.
Is it Wednesday? Is that when we first start? Wednesday, Thursday?
Yeah, Wednesday at 4:30.
Okay.
But if not, think there is then he's definitely able to go on on that Thursday, you know, following the Tuesday game, or the Wednesday game. So, you know, you limited his pitch count. I think he'll be ready to go then, and then that sets him up to be able to pitch at the start of the regional as well the following week. So I think you're at a good spot there. But again, tonight, an entirely new series. You know, you'll have Chase Burns on the mound tonight, who is pitching, I guess, on his typical Fridays that he's used to, but also not used to necessarily pitching in game two of a series. So we'll keep an eye on that. You know, statistically, he's kind of recovered from those two starts he stumbled from. You know, the stats haven't been amazing, but they haven't been bad either.
Yeah. You just wanted to see him go further than four innings. You want to see him make it past that fourth.
So we'll see. I mean, if he can continue to ramp back up to what he was what he was or close to what he was, as we get in the postseason too. But a big start for him. You know, I don't know what to expect from this Mississippi State team tonight. You know, it's one of two things. It is a team that shows some pride, that is embarrassed and wants to fight back after, I mean, again, having one last series to save your season potentially to get to Hoover. I mean, you lose 27-2 game one. And now, you know, you have to win two in a row against the same team that just beat you 27-2. So, you know, is there going to be embarrassment that, oh my gosh, like my family member, my mother, my grandmother, they had to watch as my soul was ripped from my body by Tennessee baseball. You know, I'm never going to let that happen again. That feeling is too bad. I'm going to give the best fight of my life tonight. Or, you know, are you going to get a team that is ready for the season to end? Because, you know, it wouldn't be unwarranted for Mississippi State players to feel like that. You know, I would understand.
Yeah,
if you're coming off of the national championship and all of a sudden you've won 10 out of you've lost 10 out of your last 11 games. You have no one that's really stepped up as a leader. You've lost everything you have to injuries too. I mean, just so many injuries. You know, your crowd for the first time all year is not a sellout for a weekend series. You know, are you going to get the reaction instead of just, I just want this to be over. Like, let's just roll over, coast to the end. You know, I don't have it with me anymore. I don't have it in me anymore. And, you know, if you would hope that someone's a competitor. You'd hope that if you're a Mississippi State fan that, you know, if you're a competitor regardless of what's happened prior or what's at stake, if you're competing in something, you are giving everything you have to win. You know, that's just in your blood. But I don't know if it's in the blood of the Mississippi State team or else
it's hard.
Under 500, and it is hard when you're playing in.
Well, I mean, most of your best players are out with injuries.
You have the injuries, but.
Yeah. It's hard to rally around a bunch of kids that haven't been there, that haven't had the. Or needed to be the guy that stood up and carried a team. You know, you're expecting that to be a bunch of other guys, and then not being able to rally throughout the whole season, man. You're already at the end. You don't really, after last night, I mean, does that not just kick you right in the gut and just tell you that you're not going to make this tournament and this is the end here? I mean, what happened last night was, did Georgia end up beating Missouri or did they lose? Because I know they were down in the fifth, down by like, it was like 7-2. Let me check. Yeah, they lost 11-3. So, I mean, do you think seeing the other scores, the teams they're battling for those last couple spots, play well? Alabama ended up losing. Missouri won. And then who was the other team? It was at the bottom there. And LSU stomped Vanderbilt. Wow.
But I don't see them putting up too much more of a fight. Is basically my point.
Yeah, I mean,
I just there's just after last
Mississippi State and Missouri are now both one game back of Kentucky and Alabama. So they still have the opportunity. They just need. I mean, they just have to win two more games. You know, Missouri has to win the last two. Mississippi State has to win the last two. That's probably where you're at. The log jam just keeps getting tighter.
After an embarrassment like that, just send me home, coach. I don't want to go through a postseason tournament of getting embarrassed immediately.
Yeah, Tennessee, obviously in first, but Arkansas and A&M tied for second. And then at 15-11, you have Auburn. 15-13, you have LSU. How'd that happen? I don't know. But the 13-15 Ole Miss, but then like Florida, Georgia, Vanderbilt, all 14-14. Like, it's still very tight. You know, Arkansas beating Bama last night, Florida beating South Carolina, LSU stomping Vanderbilt. Auburn, Kentucky got postponed.
Oh, I was looking for that game. I could not find it anywhere there. Oh, it's not at the very bottom.
But last night, I thought it was kind of funny, too. He tweeted it, and then he deleted it. Hobie Hobart, the owner of one of the biggest bars in Starkville, that it's like one of the big baseball supporters. You know, he has his grill. He feeds the team. The team loves to go to the Hobie's. He tweeted, "The New York Yankees would have beat us 27, or would not have beat us 27-2. This is horse bleep. If y'all quit, let me know so I know I don't have to spend $100 on groceries to grill tomorrow. Hey,
oh,
hey, Hail State Baseball. How about you don't get drunk tonight?"
Oh my God.
He was kind of implying that they'd just still just been getting drunk nights before games, and they've really kind of mailed it in. So, I mean, you know, take that for what it is. He since deleted that tweet. That was, I think, an angry, reactionary tweet. But
he was probably – he might have been a little drunk himself.
Yeah. He was implying that this Mississippi State team has given up.
I mean, do you blame them, though? I mean, even as a fan of them, like, do you really sit there and go
– I could never – I can't necessarily relate to – mailing it in or wanting it to be over, because I can just never do that. You know, I could. Me fight 20 professional fights in the UFC, and I could get.
I will
beaten
say.
To near death in 19 of them, and in the 20th one, I'm not just going to want to mail it in. I'm going to try to, you know, kill the 20th guy and win.
I'm pretty sure the Yankees would have put up 40 last night.
I don't think so.
Oh, dude, man, you're telling me Giancarlo Stanton wouldn't have just gone yard and yard and yard?
Giancarlo Stanton. Oh. Okay. That just reminded me. There was a funny story last night in baseball that involved Giancarlo Stanton. I wrote it down in my notes app. I'll bring that up later. Maybe I'll close an hour with it. But we're going to catch another quick break here. We'll continue to talk Vols baseball on the other side. Stay with us right here on The Blitz. Continuing to talk Vols baseball here. The lineup was pretty special last night, too. One of the things we talked about with Logan Quinton yesterday when he joined the show was, what are you going to do lineup-wise with that DH spot? Because I think at this point, Seth Stevenson, as long as he continues to hit the ball well, he's going to be in the left. You know, I think you have Lawson at short still. Ortega at second. Lipscomb at third. Lipsius at first. You got Gilbert and Beck filling out the outfield. Obviously, Evan Russell's behind the plate. And that leaves you a potentially healthy Jared Dickey. You also have a pretty solid bat, and, you know, with Christian Moore, or I say Christian Moore, Christian Moore, or Christian Scott.
Christian Moore.
Yeah. It's old. So you have that. And then you have Blake Burke, who has a really, I mean, really, really, really emerged for this team lately. You know, he's continued to get more opportunities. Just another guy that has reached that double-digit home run mark now with 10 home runs, with another one last night. I mean, maybe he's, you know, just a guy that you use as like a power lefty against righties, but at this point, Blake Burke is my pick. You know, sure, Christian Moore, he's done it in more opportunities. He's had 105 at-bats. You know, he's started 26 games. He has an OPS over 1,000. You know, he has an average sitting at 305. He has 10 home runs himself, three doubles, two triples, slugging 657. So it's really hard to say that that's not the guy that you want DHing. And I don't even know if that's what I would say. Like that, I wouldn't say necessarily that's not the guy I wanted DHing. It's just I want Blake Burke at this point DHing even more than I want Christian Moore to DH. Because Blake Burke sure. Right now, he's on a tear. So I think you do have to kind of ride the hot bat a little bit. And you
as know, long Blake as he's Burke still hitting,
the,
yeah.
Plays the first couple games. You know, maybe if – obviously that's a really versatile position. It's DH. You know, you can pinch hit there all the time if you want to. You know, you can – Dickey, Moore, whoever else, like you can rotate guys in and out of that position depending on the day, depending on the pitching matchup. But Blake Burke at this point is my primary option. OPS of 1.485.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah, that's just
an average of 400. Oh my goodness. He has three doubles. He has a triple. 10 home runs, 26 RBIs. He's slugging 938.
Good God.
It's not real.
No.
Even stole two bases just for fun.
Unless he starts struggling in a series, I don't see them replacing him in the starting lineup. You could possibly see him get pinched hit for if he's having a bad game. But, I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, how do you take him out?
At this point, you know that you can get a home run from him once every 1.5 games. That's the rate that he's at. Every 6.5 at-bats has been a home run.
That's for Blake impressive. Burke. It's very impressive.
So if you can, you know, get – if the offense is rolling and you can get 4 at-bats in a game,
God,
I mean, 4 divided by 6.5, there's a 61.5% chance that you get a Blake Burke home run statistically, you know, based on past results. Obviously, that's not how that actually works. You know, it's all
fluctuated
and whatever else. But so far this year, that's statistically what it has been. If he has 4 at-bats in a game, there is a 61% chance that he is going to hit a home run based on the stats that he's had so far. So Blake Burke right now is my go-to. You know, again, especially if he's against righties, just a powerful, powerful, powerful lefty. But if you choose a healthy Jared Dickey or you, who, you know, at one point before he got hurt was maybe your best hitter, you know, was hitting like your best hitter, or if you choose, again, and also incredibly talented, numbers-popping guy in Christian Moore. Can't hate on that either.
No. I love where we're at. We had those weeks where, I guess, skepticism almost crept in. Not skepticism, but, you know, it creeped in the back of your mind, complacency and such, and you kind of not got less confident in the team, but you just saw where there were some parts that we were vulnerable and that we could be taken down, per se. But, you know, you just forget how deep we are. You forget just how many ways we can almost bail ourselves out of if we're not playing well. We have another guy that could spark that. We have someone. We don't always have to rely on that one dude. Kind of like, I guess, Mississippi State's a good example. You know, they lost their big leaders. And nobody's been able just to kind of take that. If that happened to us, I don't see that same situation panning out. Because of all the leadership, even from the young guys, man. I mean, it's a very great place to be. And going into postseason, I mean, I don't see us, I mean, if as a fan, not confident to the max. I mean, I'm expecting a deep, deep push. I'm expecting us to, you know, you'll have a game where we come on here and we talk about –
what we'd like to see differently. You know, maybe we've lost a step, maybe, but it's so hard to picture us in the postseason. The mentality of the players we have, the aggressiveness of always wanting to be that guy. And I guess the only worry I have is, I guess watching the game last night, they were talking, the announcers, he said they were talking to Vitello, and he said the only thing that he said some of the guys have admitted to him is just the neutral site games and the added pressure that those bring with the extra fans. And he said that that kind of affects them, is what he was saying last night, talking about just the players feeling just a little bit added pressure than playing in these other ballparks, you know, going to like an away team. It's not really pressure. It's more these guys hate us. Let's show them to hate us more. But in a neutral site game, it's more about putting on a performance, I guess, because there's not just your fans and not just the other team's fans there. There's a grouping of people. So like the Texas Tech game that we played earlier in the season, and then up at the Smokies is another example of just, you know, not performing up to our regular selves. So I think that's the only thing I'm worried about going into this postseason, is just playing at neutral site games and not losing our focus and not letting that get to us. Because that was just the one thing that kind of stuck in me during last night's game, was that little comment that he made talking about him having a conversation with Vitello about the team.
Yeah, I mean, you know, tonight will be pretty telling for this Tennessee team. Or I know, not necessarily telling, but more interesting. Tonight will be interesting for this team, just to see, you know, how do you respond after blowing a team out? You know, do you come back with that same edge? You know, what does that look like the next day? Because that's something that can happen in the postseason. You know, 2 weeks from now,
that's what I mean about losing focus and
seeing
such.
A four-seeded Delaware State beating them by 20 runs, but then coming out the next Friday and completely clean slate, and you know, having to play a good Clemson team or a good UConn team. So, you know, it'll just be interesting tonight. Again, you know, there's nothing that you really gain,
no,
from winning. But just, you know, I'm not gonna say it doesn't matter, because it always matters. If you're doing something, then it's worth doing. It matters.
Yeah, I
but
agree.
It's not like it's not impactful necessarily.
No.
Last night was certainly fun, and you know, I hope you can go take a series tonight.
You'll probably see something close to last night tonight. I wouldn't say 20 plus runs again, but I do not see them. I just don't think they. I'm telling you that bat flip off their one little home run, I'm telling you, it's just all kind of just a joke, you know, just let's get out of this. Let's put our head down and regroup. Cause I mean, the season's a bust. So at the same time, I mean,
we'll see tonight, I guess, what kind of Mississippi State team you get. It'll be Chase Burns and it'll be Preston Johnson, 3-3, a 5.55 ERA.
That's just got to suck, dude. You go from Dolan to
We'll
Burns.
Take a quick break here, and on the other side, we'll take a look at some bracketology. Stay with us right here on The Blitz. Now in the street there is violence, and then a lot of weapons. Back here on The Blitz, talking bracketology. As D1 Baseball put out their latest projected field of 64 with 1 week to go. They sent it out yesterday before the game started, so, you know, I doubt
it's
changed
too much.
Significantly in 1 day of games. Your first four out, Wake Forest, a good Wake Forest team, too. Mercer, MTSU, and Louisiana. Last four in, Georgia Tech, UTSA, Clemson, Old Dominion. But your projected national seeds, your number one overall projected seed, obviously Tennessee. No surprise. There's nothing they can do to lose that, in my opinion. Oregon State, 2, Virginia Tech, 3, Miami, 4. Auburn, they have, being one of those top 8 seeds in line to host a super regional at 5. Good for Auburn, man. Good for Auburn. Stanford 6, Maryland all the way up to 7. You can really, by the way, Maryland, you can still get them at this like 40th best odds to win the College World Series.
Oh wow.
At least I did 2 weeks ago or a week ago. I got them at like 65-1 or 75-1 to win the College World Series, and they're literally projected a national seed. The lines College World Series futures make no sense. So just go check them out. See if you can find yourself some value on any given day because they literally make no sense. But Louisville, the last team projected to be able to host a super, as Texas A&M is sitting right there at 9. I still would find it hard to believe that Texas A&M would be held out of those top 8 seeds, especially given their conference record if they close out the season strong. They won last night, so if they finish out this series against Ole Miss. And then,
how do you not go to College Station, yeah?
Yeah, and then follow that up with something decent in the SEC tournament. I think College Station will be in line to not only host a regional but host a super. But College Station, yeah, getting a regional as well. Texas A&M the 9th, Oklahoma State the 10th, Notre Dame 11th, Florida State 12th, Arkansas 13th, Vanderbilt 14th, so that's funny. Suck it. Texas Tech now up to 15th. Thank goodness. I don't want them to be our 2 seed. Gonzaga 16th. Other SEC schools.
You got
LSU in the Lubbock Regional as a 2 seed there. And then you have Florida as a 2 seed in the Coral Gables Regional. Gables against Miami, which that would be truly hilarious. Or not hilarious, truly fun. I don't know why I said hilarious. That would truly be a lot of fun to see both of those teams there. Then you have Georgia as a potential 2 seed in
Tallahassee. I love that word.
So that's, you know, 3 more that aren't necessarily national seeds, but are still right there.
And then Ole Miss is a 3 seed in Louisville.
Ole Miss is a 3 seed, and they've found their way back into the tournament. You know, they're still not all the way safe, but they're pretty much safe as in that Louisville regional. So there's, 4 more plus the 1, 2, 3, 4, excuse me, 5. In total, 9 SEC schools projected in the tournament, 5 of them projected to host regionals, 2 of them and potentially 3 in line to host supers as well.
Domination.
So, the SEC, at one point this year, maybe looked like it was slightly down this year. That the top wasn't as good, but the lower middle was maybe better. And slowly teams have started to separate themselves, and the SEC has once again proved that they are a dominant conference.
Are you liking our projection of matchups for us with the Delaware State, Connecticut, and Clemson?
What?
Do you like our matchups that they have projected for us?
Oh, yeah, that's where I was headed next, specifically in the Knoxville region. Number 1 overall, obviously, Tennessee. Number 4 would be Delaware State. Delaware State, no Wright State. Delaware State, I know a couple guys that play there that I've seen play for a summer. Respectfully,
ooh.
I don't think they're very good.
I love their school colors, kind of.
Yeah, no, they have sick colors.
Yeah.
They really do. But, yeah, respectfully, I don't think that they were very good baseball players when I watched them and broadcasted them for a summer. One of them even quit halfway through the summer.
Oh.
They've rolled through the MEAC to this point. They actually barely survived yesterday in the opening round of the MEAC tournament. But
who'd they play? Norfolk State, right?
Yeah, they played Norfolk State, and now they play Coppin State today. But whoever comes out of the MEAC, usually not a very good baseball team, unfortunately, for the MEAC. Same with the SWAC, usually. But Delaware State would not be a team I'd worry about too much. As for Clemson and UConn, the 2 seed is going to be a pretty decent baseball team. And UConn is a pretty solid baseball team. They're 43-10. 43-11. Playing in the Big East, obviously nice, 16-3 there, but they have a win over a Louisville team that's gonna host a regional and potentially host a super, and you know, they've played some really sound baseball throughout the year. Again, the Big East, incredibly easy. You know, it's not a hard conference to play in at all. So they haven't really been tested a whole lot. So it'll be hard to exactly determine what this UConn team is, but they won a high volume of baseball games, and they got some dudes that can hit. Like Corey Morton is hitting over 400. Eric Stock's right there at 400. And then they have dudes that with some very low ERAs. So statistically, they're going to be a really good-looking baseball team on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then Clemson has just had a tough year just with the schedule that they've had. But they're 33-21. You know, they've swept South Carolina, and then they've also gotten swept by Miami. And then, you know, they've lost a series with Pitt inexplicably, but they've come back and beaten Georgia in a midweek. I mean, they're a talented team, but they're a flawed team as well. They do have a guy that I excuse me. They do have a guy that I do like a lot, and Kier Meredith, and Max Starbuck, another guy that's pretty solid coming off the bench for them. But Max Wagner is their best hitter. I mean, they do have some good players as well. If I could pick any two seed, I'd pick Georgia Southern, a team that you've already swept this year. And if I could pick any three seed, I'd probably pick San Diego.
Just for ease reasons?
Yeah.
Gotcha. I would definitely take Georgia Southern,
but
just because
Georgia Southern, maybe you can get that just because they're close. But actually, no, you can't because you've played them already this year, I think. So you can't get that. But
oh, they don't.
I forgot. Yeah.
Okay.
I forgot that's not a thing.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing to do, I guess.
But anyway, bracketology, Tennessee. Obviously, there's no real surprise, no intrigue, mystery there. That we're just going to be the number one overall seed, but it'll be fun to see who you end up getting matched up with in that region, and you know, and also potentially in a super. Oh, I guess I will go ahead and include that right here at the end of the hour. The super that you would match, or the regional that you would match up with in the super, is that Gonzaga regional. Gonzaga, Pennsylvania, Oregon, and NC State. You know, decent teams there. But hour one of the Blitz done. Hour two on deck. Stay with us right here on Fan Run Radio.